Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined, as always, by Jeff Woody. And, of course, CFTV Live is presented to you by our good friends over at Agrigold. They know corn. Give them a look online, agrigold.com, agrigold.com. Or you could give them a call on your cell phone, Jeff Woody.
On the telephone.
1-800-262-7333.
Or on Gray's rotary phone that he's still got.
Yeah. Adam Gray doesn't know anything about technology. That's going to be the theme of today's episode of CFTV Live.
I feel like it's the theme of most of them.
Yeah. We went to Best Buy, me and him. Mm-hmm. It was an experience.
Is he like dumbfounded by the television? What are the moving pictures?
Hey, that's not nice.
He's saying he's number one off camera.
But yeah, Agrigold, they know corn. Look them up online, agrigold.com, 1-800-262-7333. Jeff, what do you came to talk about the Texas Longhorns?
I did, and I didn't realize that I was wearing this color until that I was going to be on camera in this color. We had staff pictures at work today.
Wait, so you were going to be on camera in that color?
In a different capacity, yes. On a camera and a photograph,
yeah.
Which is a more familiar medium for Adam. The stationary still photos.
He's mad because he can't defend himself.
He's so salty right now.
I'm sorry, Adam.
I'm not.
So are we feeling optimistic again this week, or are we angry now?
I think I'll speak to me, because I think the people that are actually like fully employed through Cyclone Fanatic have a much better pulse of what the fan base is feeling. Mm-hmm. But me being analyst and me being I guess football alumnus, I'm feeling really encouraged about it.
Yeah.
Because the good things that we saw, because a lot of times what you'd see, like think about last year, like the good things that you saw that you'd see against Oklahoma State would then disappear, or you'd see good things you'd see against another team would disappear in successive weeks, and they wouldn't continually improve, whereas they'd kind of peak, you know, blow a lead, which is an Iowa State tradition. And so you'd peak, but play well, blow a lead, and you have that kind of sort of optimistic thing. And the next week, just get shellacked or something like that, or get waxed, whatever team you're playing. Well, that didn't happen in one of the harder games that Iowa State's going to play. When you go to Stillwater, obviously Iowa State hasn't won there since you and I were in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And that being able to do what they did for the first three quarters shows that from a talent and execution standpoint, they're right there. What they still need to work on is the same thing that we saw last week, which is don't panic once you get there. Like, be realizing the fact that you actually can win, and I think that's the biggest hurdle. But they're going to play well with whomever they play for the rest of the year.
This is something I was kind of thinking about yesterday. Is it like they're playing so well, and then it's like, we're going to do this. You know, we've got everything cooking. We're feeling good. We're just going to keep putting up points. And then all of a sudden, it's like one bad thing happens, and it's like that one bad thing is almost kind of like a trigger that just is like, it kind of just flips it, and it's like, oh, wait, oh, crap. Now what if we lose?
Yeah. So
like, you're not thinking about that before, and like, you're feeling good, but then it's like that one bad thing happens. Even if it's not you that does it, it's just like, oh, crap. Like, I don't even know how to put it into words.
It's like, it's kind of like the yips.
Yeah.
Where the yips, or like the thing the analogy that comes to mind, Brent is going to love this. The Nick Anderson free throw thing.
Yeah.
Back, if you've ever seen the 30 for 30, this magic moment, the one about the Orlando Magic, after he missed the free throws, which essentially either one of them would have won the game, and he bricked both of them.
Yeah.
From that point on, he missed four in a row. And he missed four in a row and bricked all of them, and any one of them would have won the game.
Right.
Well, after that point, he missed, I think his free throw shooting percentage was somewhere in the 50s or 60s, just because he couldn't.
It was 40. It was 40s. I was actually reading about this yesterday.
So 40%. So it was really poor. And not that he was a bad basketball player everywhere else, because everywhere else you're not thinking, you're doing.
Yeah.
You're just going out and executing the thing that you're just innately reacting to. You're not trying to put your brain on top of whatever's going on. Well, when you say you have the yips in golf, or say you're Nick Anderson at the free throw line, or say you're Iowa State in the fourth quarter, the instant that you start thinking about what you have to do, nothing's perfect. So the thing you're doing is going to be imperfect, and you're going to find that imperfection. Rather than if you just go out and do it, the imperfections will work themselves out. The rough edges are going to find themselves. I mean, nobody's done anything perfect. Even that, like, I say perfect, we'll break it down. I think that touchdown pass to Allen, that long touchdown pass, it wasn't a perfect play. Like, people mess that up. So if you get to the point where you're thinking, okay, I have to do this, and then I have to do this, and then I have to do this, and then I have to do this, you go, shoot, I didn't do this. And all of a sudden you start thinking, you start slowing down, you're not reacting anymore, you are pressing the action.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, you want to go up here? Or I guess, what's it going to take to fix that? That'll be my first question.
So the thing that I had to fix, the things to fix this. So there's two things that I talked about, and I wrote about this in the Register, is fix number one is, and I think you have to have parts of both of these, mm-hmm. but the second one is more important because the second will create the first. So the first one is you have to have leadership throughout the team, and you have to have guys that are willing to take that going. So what that means is leadership doesn't necessarily mean screaming at somebody, or it doesn't have to be, you know, being the Spartacus where like getting out and like, I am the best, follow me.
Right.
What that means is if there's a guy that's tensing up, or say, you know, the example I use there is say there's an offensive tackle that's like starts to play really nervous and is not throwing his hands aggressively because he's afraid he's going to miss or something like that. And then he gets beat. Well, if that guy's nervous and you know the thing that makes him feel better, then what a leader does is goes to make a bad joke to get him to laugh and forget about his tension and just relax a little bit.
Right.
So you have to have some type of leader to know the personality of each, you know, of the guys that are there. Like some guys, I'm not saying that anybody there, but say for example, Kane Seeley, I don't think he is, but say for example, Kane's a guy that you need to scream at. When he gets in the fourth quarter, he starts to relax too much. Say he's a guy you need to scream at. Well, you need to have a guy that screams at him. Say Demond Tucker's a guy you need to tell a joke to. You need to be able to tell a joke to Demond Tucker.
Right.
And then guys around them have to sense what you're trying to do and do the same thing. So it has to. You have to lose this panic and pressing, and it has to start from kids because coaches can't lead that. The phrase, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Mm-hmm. A coach can try to instill confidence, but the kids have to be the ones that drive it along. And the second thing is you just have to, at some point, win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, to break a losing streak in the fourth quarter, win. Duh.
Yeah.
But what I mean by that is not necessarily in the sense of going out and, like, making all these great plays, but at some point, just you have to escape with a win. If obviously best case scenario, say we get up by 17 to Texas, they close the gap to 3 and we turn on the burners and win by 14, something like that. That'd be great. But say that this Oklahoma State game is going on and they're collapsing and they're in mid collapse like they have been the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, and that fumble that they had with the quarterback and the running back pops to one of the Iowa State players and they recover it, mm-hmm. and they win by 3. And they have no business of winning that game because they had 26 yards of total offense in the fourth quarter,
right.
but they escaped with a win anyway. Well, what that does is it takes the pressure off of, holy cow, we're gonna collapse and we're gonna lose this game, and it turns it into, we can still win. Mm-hmm. We're gonna find a way out of this. And it stops becoming, I have to think about what's going on. It's okay, we know that this is capable of what we're doing, so we just have to go out and do it. And I think once you win, then everyone stops tensing up and leadership becomes much easier to be. So it
needs to happen one time.
Right, exactly.
Because I feel like once you do it that one time, then you have that experience to kind of fall back on, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, we did it before. And I think even like a team like Tennessee, who's had these games where they get way behind and then they battle all the way back. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's even some of it to that where they like, they get way behind. They're like, oh, it's all good.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. It's the exact situation, but probably in reverse where
right.
they are
well,
so comfortable.
Well, they would rather not do that, obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
but they're so comfortable playing from behind when things negatively happen in the first half. They're like, ah, we're good. We're good. We'll be fine. And they don't turn the engine on when they need to.
Right.
So it's the inverse with Tennessee and Iowa State. But yeah, think of, and I know people are going to kill me for this, but think of the Iowa Hawkeyes the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. In games decided by 6 points or less, they're what, like 8-2 or 8-1 or something like that. And they're not good wins. Like that win at Rutgers was just abysmal. It was disgusting.
I mean, I would say that even that win last week wasn't that
exactly.
good.
Exactly. It was. They're not good wins, but they're wins.
I think you can definitely say that after you saw what Harbaugh's crew did to
oh my
Rutgers
goodness.
On Saturday.
Sorry, Shane.
Yeah.
That's not been there.
Yeah. Well, maybe not that bad.
Not that bad, but no. Been there.
Yeah.
That Utah game was. That was something. 64-14. Yeah, that was. Okay, moving on.
Adam, are you ready to go to TV?
You tell me when.
All right, I think we're good.
Okay.
Are we good here? You were all moving around.
I think we're good.
Okay.
Technical issues.
No, it's just Adam's.
Grandpa Gray.
Yeah.
So we're going to start. We'll start with good things. And the reason why I'm not nervous. So we'll start with Joel's run. So the things that I like that we're doing are we're now executing the things. We're executing the things now that we weren't early in the year. So remember, early in the year, you've got a tight end. We're going to leave the defensive end, go up to block the linebacker, block man on. We're going to take this running back out here, and we're going to read this guy. If he runs out, we're going to keep it as a quarterback. If we give it to the running back, if he plays the quarterback, we're going to give it to the running back and sweep. So we're reading this guy. If he goes here, we go here. If he goes here, we go here. Stuff we ran probably 6 or 7 times against Northern Iowa and got 10 yards off of it on those 6 plays. Well, now we've been executing well enough to the point where we get this backside blocked. Mike Warren's the legitimate threat, and Joel Lanning, all he has to do is read that. So you're instead of reacting to the defense, you're pressing the defense and putting one guy in a lose-lose situation. So back that UNI game, this guy was able to play both because he didn't have to respect either one. We weren't blocking the backside, so even if he played the back, a linebacker was making him open space. So play this and watch how I'll have you freeze it. Freeze. This defensive end played the running back. We get sealed. Doesn't matter. He's too far behind the play to actually make a tackle. So we have seal. We have a guard that we've done such a good job blocking man-to-man that this guard is totally is unencumbered. Mm-hmm. So Joel can even be a little bit patient to let this guy get out in front. Otherwise, this guy's just going to look and seal off anything on the inside. So play a little bit farther. And freeze. This is a 1st and 10 play. This is the first down marker. This is the closest a defender has come to Joel Lanning since this play started, and it's 2 yards. So the reason why I'm optimistic about Iowa State is that they're able to do stuff like this. Like, they're actually executing. It's not a fluke. They're not getting these big chunk goof plays.
Right.
By just kind of stumbling upon them. They're blocking the hell out of them, and they're executing like they need to.
How much credit do you give to Tom Manning, the coaches, like getting them into this situation? How much is it the shuffling around that they've done and guys just getting comfortable in the system?
It's both, because technique's a lot better. So run that all the way back to the start, and we'll point at the O-line for a second. So what this is going to be is it's going to be a combination from here down. So these two guys are going to come off to this guy. We're blocking man. So what we're doing is we have to get this guy moved, and the tackle has to pass him off to the next lineman before we get up here, because one of these two guys has to get to this linebacker, because this linebacker can kill the play right where it stands. So what this double team is doing, and this is a lot of coaching, is this double team moves so far back that it's easy for one of them to come off. So working together helps understand what's going on, but coaching also is better in teaching technique how to do this. So just specifically watch this double team combination to the backside backer. So we're getting a bunch of movement, pass this off, we get it taken over by the guard, and then Nick Fedd is able to come off and get to this scraping linebacker. So there's no issues that we've got as we're trying to get a play run. There's no issues in the offensive line. We're able to block who we need to block, and we're able to dominate who we need to dominate.
Sorry.
All right. Sorry, trying to get this figured out.
So I think the next play.
Yeah, what do we want to do next?
So the next play we'll do is another good, positive play, and we'll go to Allen's second touchdown. Because this is to set up a reason why they have a later touchdown is this touchdown. So this is one way that teams will play Iowa State and have played Iowa State, is they play 3 over 2, meaning these two, This is going to be an underneath defender, and then these two guys have to take these two guys. So if there's any drop off or a short play by either one of them, this guy's going to come underneath it. If they continue long, these guys are going to take it. So this becomes actually cover four. Four deep safeties, but the way this coverage turns out is if these guys were to run like some kind of twist, like he runs out this way and he runs in here, then this, they're going to pass it off. So what happens here is we get the proper confusion. We get the proper mismanagement of this play because we're going to get number two is going to run in this way. This safety has to respect that movement. This guy's going to play underneath. So we take away the double coverage option because we're pulling this safety out and we're taking this flat as a threat away. So this flat comes over here. So then we're one-on-one with a corner. And Alan Lazard wins that one-on-one matchup every single time. So we're going to get not even a play action at all. It's just some type of cross motion to get this guy to stay. We're going to have flat. We'll have this guy run with the coverage and we're going to run a post on this one. So go ahead and play this one. So again, these guys get pulled out and we deliver a ball right here. So there's no good way to cover this. So we're going to have pull this guy over, excuse me, Allen's in the slot. So this guy's going to get pulled over, has to pull this safety or this number one safety out. Excuse me, I was wrong on this play. So you have the number one safety pulling out. You have the number two safety that's playing man on man on a post. Again, either way, they're wrong. We've gotten to the point where we can execute. When they cover 3-over-2, we can still win in the pass game. So we can run the ball. We can throw the ball. We just need to be able to finish.
Right. What do you got next?
So I think the Dondre touchdown would be the Dondre big play, excuse me, is the next one. So now, Alan Lazard is your number one defined threat, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
So we're going to have a motion coming out. This is going to be a bubble. These two guys are going to run verticals. So this is Dondre. This is Allen. Allen's going to end up coming this way, more of a lateral guy, and this ends up crossing, and Dondre becomes here. So this is a bubble go concept where we're going to try and pull these shallow guys in, get the safeties to hesitate for a step, and then try and bail and run, and we're going to get one of these guys open. Now, we take a home run shot. Who do you think they're going to be looking for? Number five.
Yeah.
So if there's ever a vertical threat, number five is the one that everybody's eyes go to, even if it's not your job. So another good reason why I'm encouraged about Iowa State's offense is that guys like number 13 are making plays. So we have this route to get vertical. Dondre's going to get underneath. We have a pat bubble fake to try and get get people's eyes with Trevor Ryan. We hold this front side up and we're wide open. Go ahead and play this and see how we'll freeze it right just about when the ball's down. So Trevor's going to catch this. You have these guys play it. We're playing up and keep going. Freeze. So this guy was supposed to pass off with Dondre because, remember, Allen was playing the number two spot. Dondre is playing the number one spot, so they crossed at some point. This guy sees number five and thinks, I have to follow him. I've got to make sure that he doesn't beat me deep. All of a sudden, the guy who's not a threat comes wide open.
Do you see how – hey, running back to the beginning. Do you see how when he starts his route, Dondre kind of – he takes like a couple steps out, like –
this is
that's faking?
He's dummy blocking.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna run the bubble to get guys to set up and then he takes off. That works sometimes, that doesn't work sometimes, but the thing that was the bigger threat here, the bubble pulled this middle of the field open.
Yeah.
That's what gets these guys to stay shallow. So that pulls this over. But to get this portion of the coverage, that's number five, is we're gonna run Dondre underneath and sneak him by, and they're gonna get scared about Alan Lazard. So we've got big plays by five, we've got five as a decoy and big plays to everyone else, and we've got the ability to run the ball. That's why Iowa State is executing a really high level. Just the issue is they have to somehow learn to finish.
One thing that I notice here too, and I think how the play originally gets set up is because you got a guy at the end position, either it's Trevor Ryan or Deshaunte Jones, mm-hmm. now where there's a lot of tape on these guys making plays, mm-hmm. a lot. So when they set up the bubble screen there, the defense has to flow where in years past, no offense to some of the other Iowa State wide receivers, mm-hmm. hey, you throw this worst case scenario, they're going to get 5 yards, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Now you have to really focus in on Trevor Ryan because he's got the ability, and the same thing for Jones. Mm-hmm. Is it really just that simple as far as why our offense all of a sudden looks so much more wide open? Because everything used to look so difficult, mm-hmm. right? Everything was difficult. the last two games, everything looks so simple.
Right.
Is it just from a simple point of there's a couple extra playmakers, and those playmakers put so much more stress on a defense?
Yes, two things. One, yes, you're exactly right. When you have playmakers at multiple positions, not just a Darius Reynolds, not just a guy like Aaron Horn, but you have multiple playmakers at three or four different positions because Mike's a threat to run, Allen's a threat to catch, and then your M position's a catch for or a threat for screens, and then Dondre picks up the scraps. When he gets single covered, he can beat anybody.
And both your quarterbacks can run,
and
too.
Both your quarterbacks can run. So when there's threats everywhere, the defense can't play a tendency. So, yes, when you keep the field balanced up by having threats everywhere, they can't focus in on what you're good at.
Do you think some of them getting so much better in the last couple of weeks is the staff too learning what they can do with mm-hmm. these guys and how they can manipulate the offense to work for them?
And that's the second point. So the second point is making the easy play. And by making the easy play, that means calling the easy call and making the easy response to that. So again, right. like Monte Morris is the example that I like to use for all of this because he's the best assist point guard Iowa State has probably ever had. And when he makes an assist, it's not that, oh my goodness, he passed it between his legs to somebody or threw it over his head. He's just getting in the lane, making somebody close to him, and then kicking something out to George or Naz or something like that.
He just makes the right play rather than the flashy play.
Exactly. You make the easy play, and the easy play is the right play. Where if Jacob Park goes, all right, I know number five is going to make this play, and he just throws it up to Allen, he's double covered, and he forgets about Dondre. So when you make the easy play is the best play almost all the time, and that's what Iowa State's now doing is the coaching staff is putting them in the right position, and they're getting the right reads. They're getting the right blocks. They're not putting them in compromising positions that they can make the easy play, and they know exactly what they're supposed to do.
This is statistically the Iowa State offense right now is as high in almost every category as they've been in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that has as much to do with the defenses they faced, or is it just is the offense that good?
Well, the defenses that they faced aren't actually particularly bad. Mm-hmm. They're, for the most part, I mean, from a Big 12 context, you're not playing
right.
Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama back to back to back. But from a Big 12 context, they're actually the better. They're probably going to be in the top half of defenses, especially Oklahoma State. They turn the ball over. This is the number one turnover margin team outside of TCU in the conference every year.
Yeah.
And so they're good. They're a good defense. But again, a balanced field and easy decisions makes football look so much simpler than it really is.
For sure.
The other thing, so flip over to the DeMond play. So one of the things that's promising, we're not there yet, but what's promising is the play of the defense is getting a lot better. And it's starting here. Because what did we talk about in Northern Iowa and TCU and Iowa?
They're all getting shoved out of the way.
Interior line, linebacker play. Those were the two things that were the most dysfunctional right in the core, right in the gut this team.
The linebackers especially, I noticed there were a couple times, I mean, Brian Mills was in there making some mm-hmm. nice plays. Kane Seeley made plays better than he's made mm-hmm. most of the season.
Mm-hmm. And it's because these guys are taking care of business. So just play it for like a second and then I'll freeze it. So This is going to be a dive. It's a third and one. All they have to get the ball to is right here in order to make this play. Linebackers have to, for a second, think about some type of play action. So these guys can't – this is a corner, but he can't trigger, like, right now. His key is that he sees dive. So he's responsible for this guy. He's fitting right away. Now, run that back real quick. Sorry, run that back to the start real quick. So DeMond Tucker's playing a head-up position, maybe slightly shaded to one side. If they're running to one side or the other, one of the things that stops any run game is penetration because you can't get to the spot you need to get to. This is a third and one play. This running back's going to try and get right here. Well, if I push this one of these linemen back in the way, I can't get a full head of steam. I have to bubble around, which loses the leverage that I'm trying to block everyone else with. So penetration kills any play. That's what DeMond was doing last year that he wasn't doing this year. Well, for the first time, we saw this group, this position group, finally starting to get push on the offensive line. So watch DeMond Tucker here, and then watch Kane Seeley, I think this is Mills. Watch what they're able to do off of that. So, Greg, hit this play again. So play and freeze. So this running back is dead to rights. Run that back actually like half a second. So run it back to the running back's about right, yeah, right there. So DeMond is pushing this guy back, and he knows he's got a front side gap. This linebacker has actually started to fit back here. So what DeMond has essentially done by penetration is he's taken and put himself here, and he's cleared space for the linebacker to sit right here.
Right.
So the running back's dead to rights. If we don't miss a tackle, he's able to take this right now. So what this looks like is we've got a tight end attached. We've got a tight end attached over here. We've got a flanker on this side. So you have nose tackle, linebacker, linebacker, corner, receivers over here. So what they're doing is this running back is trying to get – this running back's trying to get here. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to move this out this way and push everything out, and they're trying to get this reached – and probably pulling somebody else around, or we're trying to get some type of combination movement here. Okay, so we're trying to get from these two, have to be accounted for by these two, whether it's pin and pull or whether it's push like this. Well, what happens is when DeMond gets so much pressure back this way and he plays to the front side and the backer has space to get to this side, this running back cannot go anywhere. Yep. If he tries to cut back, he's cutting back in the linebacker. If he tries to go outside, DeMond's going to get him. So there's no what the defense looked a lot better was, one, they just tackled better. Like, fundamentally, they just – when they got a hold of a player, they brought them to the ground. But the other thing is defensive line finally started creating some type of penetration, which allowed linebackers to make plays, which allowed Mills unencumbered to go make a sack or unencumbered to play a sweep or something like that, because he doesn't have people in his lap, which last – or in weeks past, imagine this being right here. Then he is one-on-one in an alley. And if he misses the tackle, it's right out the gate. And that's what happened against Northern Iowa. That's what happened against Iowa, is that we weren't getting pressure, we weren't getting push, and we were getting driven back.
How impressed were you with the defense when you consider the fact that Kamari Cotton-Moya didn't play?
It's especially impressive. And this isn't exactly – Oklahoma State's a really good offense, obviously. James Washington, probably the best wide receiver. Between him and Allen and KD Cannon, those are probably the three best wide receivers in the conference, and I don't – know how close it is. Maybe ish is sort of up there. But what Oklahoma State doesn't do as well as Baylor is they don't run the ball as well, which is nice. The safety doesn't have to fit the run.
Right.
Which means the defense can play more in pass coverage and let the linebackers and the defensive line make the plays in the run game. So they executed that to perfection. Now, Texas is a lot more – go ahead and set this back here all the way – restart this one from the jump. This is a formation you're going to see out of Texas that's much more prevalent in just every down situations. Yeah. They're a much more compact, much more power oriented team. You're going to see more of this. Maybe you have a tight end as a wide receiver. You got a wing, two tight ends, and two receivers and a running back. You have more of this kind of stuff. So Iowa State should be able to play well, even if Kamari isn't able to go, because they can let these guys take care of these guys, and the safeties and corners can be more free to play the pass game.
Is that the last play that we had?
I think so. The last play that we need to cover.
For sure. It's a little bit of a shorter one today.
Well, the thing is, so I'm trying to, on Sunday night, for whatever reason, I do my best writing between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. And
I'm the same way.
So I'm trying to sit down and write something, and I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
It's the same game.
Right. It pretty much is. Yeah. It's the exact same game.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. And it was like just watching the game, when they had that fumble, it was like, oh, crap. It had that same feeling of – it just was like, oh, no.
And the feeling
here we go again.
The feeling that you had is very similar to the feeling the players had.
Yeah.
Is when you – so think about that. So when you're when people are saying like, well, that's not a tangible thing. Like, it's just they're expecting to lose, but, competitors are competitive.
Right.
Well, think about that attitude that you've had as a Cyclone fan for God knows how many years.
Yeah.
And now think about that from a player's perspective, that same twinge of thought happens if you're not confident with how the outcome of the game is going to be. Mm-hmm. So for Iowa State, they have to get rid of that. And again, like we were saying in the open, is at some point, either a leader or leaders or the entire team has to literally extract that from them or they just have to win. Like, they have to stumble upon and execute a game or, you know, again, to use an Iowa example, make a 64-yard field goal to win a game, something like that. And do something that you don't deserve to do, but you end up winning the game. And at some point, that's going to happen, because I feel like this game was a closer, more well-played game on both sides of the ball than Baylor was, because the defense was markedly better.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Against Oklahoma State than they were against Baylor, even opponent notwithstanding. So they're doing a lot of good things, and they're doing a lot of the right things. They just need to stop panicking when they get there. And that's, again, it's going to happen. It's going to get there at some point. The other, I will say, the only tangible thing, as opposed to the team just expecting to lose, the only tangible thing that we have a deficiency with is defensive line depth. And on the, when Iowa State only gets, what, they had 7 yards in the fourth quarter against Baylor and 26 in the fourth quarter in this game. So what is that?
15 of them came on
30,
one play.
Yeah, 34 yards in two games.
Yeah.
33, whatever that math is. 33 yards in two games in the fourth quarter. Well, that means the defense is on the field a lot.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the defensive line to shuffle around, instead of doing this with the defensive line, you're getting this with the defensive line, which means the linebackers are having to work harder, means the defensive line is having to work harder, and you don't have the guys to substitute that out.
Right.
Stopping that momentum is going to be hard. So it's more on the offense than it is the defense from an execution standpoint. So, yeah, very similar to last week, which hopefully is good in the sense that, like, okay, this isn't just a one-chance occurrence. Like, we know how good we are now. It's not a freak thing that we are in the game against Baylor. We were beating up on Oklahoma State too. So hopefully they're able to go down and win at DKR, which is awesome.
Do you feel good about that possibility?
Yes.
I do too. The line's 13.5. I didn't get it.
It's in DKR, and Texas has money.
Yeah.
You set lines to win money in Las Vegas. So for whatever reason, they're putting it there. But the only thing that would give me a little pause in saying that, like, we're going to win this game is, so I think we're going to win this game. But the only thing that's keeping me from making that other leap is the fact that if Charlie Strong's Texas team is vastly different than the mid-2000s and late-2000s Texas teams. But one thing that they have been able to do is run the football.
Yeah.
They've always been able to do that. And Iowa State has had one good week of stopping the run, and that was against a pretty poor rushing team in Oklahoma State. So does that translate from week to week? And DeMond can now realize, like, okay, I just got to do my job. I'm going to push somebody back, let Mills make a tackle. I'm going to push somebody back, let Kane make a tackle. Or Pierre Aka is not trying to make the tackles themselves and just doing their job and executing like that. If they do that, then yes, we are going to win the game. If they stop the run, we will win the football game. But if they're not able to do that, which is there is the outside chance that it's a fluke week. I don't think so, but there's the outside chance that that's a fluke week and they go back to the old habits that they tried to break.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be another good game for Iowa State. I think defensively, Texas is nowhere near Oklahoma State. And I mean that seriously. I think Texas's defense is one of the more undisciplined teams. They're athletic as hell. They always have been, but they're extremely undisciplined. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get, if we make the simple plays like we have been, you're going to get wide open receivers because they're going to double one and it's not supposed to be. Or they're going to commit to a run because a defensive tackle wants to make a play and you get this giant run lane. They're really, really undisciplined. So we should be able to move the ball.
Yeah.
We should be able to have good things come on defense, but we have to stop the run and we have to not turn the ball back over.
Today is John Haycock's birthday, so.
Oh, good.
Maybe they can come through for him with a birthday gift.
Turning 36.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got anything else to add this week?
I don't think so.
Adam does?
I have questions.
Oh, okay.
When you get a legend like Jeff Woody here, you got to ask as many questions as possible. How motivated do you think Texas will be, considering not just the start, but you look back last year, they were embarrassed by Iowa State 23-0. I mean, that game was pitiful for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has got to be one they've had circled on since the offseason, saying we ain't letting this happen again.
And it's going to be one of the ones we're saying they're reeling right now.
Yeah.
They started out the season with one hot game and have been clunkers ever since, and they escaped with another win, but they're clunkers ever since. And this is a game where, as a a Texas football player, you think we are better than them, which from an athletics man-to-man standpoint, you are. You're a better athlete probably than the person across from you, but you're not generally a better football player if you're not in the right spot. So this Texas team has definitely got the attitude that we're better than you, and if you allow them to be, this game, like I said, if they can run the ball and they give it gives that Texas team a little bit of confidence, then yeah, this is going to be a much harder game. But if at Iowa State you go out and do what you did against Oklahoma State and you go 14, say you do 14-0, like first quarter, two drives, push them around, get in the end zone, get an interception, and push them around, get in the end zone again, something like that, then Texas could do this. Screw it. This is stupid. I hate you. I hate you. This is stupid. This coaching staff is dumb, and they don't start doing circling the wagons. They start pointing fingers.
And the fans will probably start booing.
Oh yeah. Boy. If they go down 7-0, they will get booed.
Yeah.
So when we played down there and we beat them, and this was again, I think it was 28-7 at some point when we won down there in 2010.
Yeah.
The loudest that stadium ever got was when they were booing. Booing Gilbert for a fumble or an interception.
You want to call him Blaine Gabbert there for a second, didn't you?
I did. But they were booing him. That was the loudest that stadium got. So they will be very quick to turn. So if you get 7-0, 14-0, their DKR is not kind to Texas.
So you mentioned, this is a lead up to my next question. You mentioned confidence. I think confidence in sports is probably the most important thing. And that's why for years I said Iowa State needs to go to, until they can get up to a better program, a schedule very similar to what Baylor has, where you schedule three patty cake teams. And I there's no way I've ever known this, but I think if Iowa State starts 3-0 and they beat up on teams like Northwestern State, mm-hmm. I think they know how to win games, and I think you would have seen a different outcome in the Baylor-Oklahoma State game. With that said, this team obviously has a lot more confidence now than they did mm-hmm. at the beginning of the year, but there is a fine line right now, right? If they don't close one of these games this week or the next week, do you think Campbell risks losing this team in the season already because they, just like what you said for Texas, throw their hands up, say, screw it. You know what? We try really hard. We're doing all the right things, and we're not seeing the results we're seeing. This sucks. I'm done. Do you worry about that at all?
I think that's a possibility, but it's not going to be a team-wide possibility. The guys that you may end up losing off the bandwagon are the turds that are barely on there in the first place. And they're the guys that are not bought in. They're the guys that are doing the wrong things off the field. They're doing the wrong things in the weight room. They're not committing themselves to executing their being as good of a person as they can be. They're not bought into this system. And then the first excuse you can to jump off of that, mm-hmm. I mean, they're guys that are loosely bought in. At some point, once if you lose, you know, you're up 17, you give it up. You're up 13, you give it up. Then you get killed by somebody. After that game, at that point, those guys will start to jump off. So that it lies on the rest of the leadership to say either get back with us or be gone. We don't need you here.
Now I got one more question from a running back's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Warren comes in. He was All-American as a freshman, right?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't gotten the ball a lot in these second halves. I think he got two carries the entire second half. Mm-hmm. A lot of Iowa State fans are sitting here saying, what the heck's going on here? He needs to get the more carries. Part of that, like you said earlier, we're not running a lot of plays in the fourth quarter to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think the staff needs to do a better job of trying to get him the ball in the second half?
Kind of, sort of, yes. I'm not going to hard commit to that because in the third quarter, Iowa State puts up 14 points and their two passing touchdowns. I think 7 points is a nice 7 points, whether it gets in by running, by passing,
completely
by
agree.
A backflip. I don't care. So it's 7 points. And generally speaking, in the first half, and almost every one of the games, we have dominated the running game. So then the natural adjustment in the second half is like, all right, we're going to make them beat us in the air, and we're going to commit to stopping the run. And then once they commit to stopping the run, you go, okay, thanks, and then start throwing the ball around. So do I think they need to abandon the run? Absolutely not. Do I think they need to probably run it a little bit more? Sure, I would agree to that. But I'm not gonna hard sell and say they have to force feed number two the ball if they're successful other places.
Do you think there's anything where they look at it in the fourth quarter, and Mike Warren's had some struggles in the fourth quarter, and they say, you know what, we just don't trust him with the ball right now. Do you think there's anything to that?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Thing is, we've seen such a small sample size because there is, what, 7 plays?
Yeah.
Baylor.
Seven plays in this one, 12. And
12 in the fourth quarter.
And a lot of them were where we had to pass because the game was almost over. So.
Right. So in two quarters, you have 19 plays, and of those plays, that some of them, like you said, are automatic passing downs, which takes it down to about 17, which if you extrapolate that to a whole game, that's 34 plays in a game.
Yeah.
If you were to spread that out. So there's there's such small of a sample size that, I mean, don't get worked up right now about it. If a trend continues and, say, Iowa State does start to get big drives and they're continuing having David Montgomery and throwing the ball around, maybe that's something to think about as far as do they not trust Mike. But I it's just still a little bit too early to make any type of sweeping generalization. Yeah. We need to get Gray a microphone. He just needs to not break it.
There's what?
You guys are intentionally not giving me a mic to try to shut me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what happens.
Yep. That's a thing.
Thanks again to our presenting sponsor, Agrigold. Check them out, agrigold.com. Give them a call, 1-800-262-7333. Thanks, Jeff Woody.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for watching.